Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal.
Thank you, everyone, for joining today's episode of How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I am your host, Sayla Prack. Today, I am honored to be joined by Joseph Cornwell. A little bit about Joseph. Joseph was a full-time police officer based in Cincinnati, Ohio, from 2011 to 2021. He began real estate investing in 2016, got his real estate license, and started buying small multifamilies, duplex, fourplex, etc. He began a general contracting business in 2018 and scaled his businesses and portfolios until he was financially free in 2021. He now has 125 units over 12 properties, ranging from single families to 40 units, value around $8 million. He sells around $8 million annually in investment property as well, and they do around $2 million a year in general contracting business. So Joseph, thank you so much for spending time with me today. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for having me.
So Joseph, if you don't mind, if you can share a little bit more about your background and how you get started with real estate to begin with, that would be great.
Yeah, I bought my first primary residence in 2011, and just got out of the police academy, as you mentioned. So I knew I wanted a career in law enforcement. And during that time, obviously, we were at the lows of the market. And, you know, here in the Midwest, you could get houses pretty cheap. So I bought a affordable house. I fixed it up myself. And when I went to sell it and trade up into my second house a few years later, I realized that I had created a lot of equity. And I didn't know anything about real estate. Nobody in my family had done real estate. It was really just that much of a lesson of, you know, I bought it cheap, fixed it up, went and sold it. And I think I made like $41,000 or something on my first house. And I was like, wow, this is over half a year's salary. And I had no idea what I was doing. So it kind of got the bug and the fire in me a little bit to start learning more about real estate investing. And so I bought my second personal residence in 2014. Started reading books, listening to podcasts, things like that, educating myself on real estate. And that kind of led me down the path of wanting to get into buy and hold. Because as I learned more about flipping, as I learned more about wholesaling and all those other, you know, types of real estate, those to me were ways to make revenue, but they weren't really investments. And I wasn't really looking for another job at that point. I was just trying to learn how to, you know, semi-passively invest in real estate. So that led me into buy and hold. And it took me a couple of years to find my first deal. So, you know, I closed on my first rental at the beginning of 2017. And that whole time I had been educating myself, saving money. And I found a duplex here in Cincinnati. And that was my first buy and hold property.
Oh, that's awesome. And you mentioned at the time, like in 2011, you just got out of the police academy and then bought your first primary home. And what made you thinking about investing in real estate? You mentioned that no one in your family has actually invested in real estate before, but there's so many different investments out there. So why real estate to begin with?
Yeah, so I think it was a mix of, like I said, I made that, that check off the equity on the first just personal residence, which kind of opened my mind to like, I didn't even mean to do this. This was, you know, market factors and my sweat equity through the forced appreciation. And so, you know, just having those two things happen, that opened my eyes to the potential of real estate. But also at that time, a little bit later, like 2015, I'd been a cop for a few years. And I realized that most of the cops I worked with who were nearing retirement age, in general, they were all miserable. You know, they hated their life. They hated their job. Many of them had been divorced three or four times. You know, being in law enforcement is one of the highest rated divorce in all careers. And so there were so many things I saw at some of the departments I worked for that were examples of how I didn't want to be and the life I didn't want in 25 or 30 years. And so I think those two factors motivated me to get into real estate.
Got it. I know you mentioned that you start your first property, rental property in 2017 as a duplex that you found in Cincinnati. And then did you actually like going in and do like self-manage and self-repairs and self-fixing and finding your tenants and everything like that? How can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I started, I did everything. So that first property, I didn't have any extra cash. I was still working as a cop. I got my real estate license in 2016. So I started selling slowly. You know, as a new agent, I had maybe done a couple deals, but it wasn't a ton of money at that point. And, you know, I didn't really have any money to hire out contractors. So I did a lot of the work myself. There were a few things that I hired out, things I wasn't comfortable with, but having done a lot of just kind of DIY work as a kid and then as a teenager. And then, you know, as I had my first two personal residences, I was pretty comfortable with it, you know, with the construction for most things. Again, I wasn't taking out, you know, foundations and load bearing walls by myself at this point. But, you know, I felt comfortable doing flooring and tile and basic things like that, painting cabinets, et cetera. And so I had a really bad experience on this property because I hired a contractor who I later found out was on drugs, and he actually stole like $3,500 from me. So that ultimately, the reason why I tell that story is because that led me into starting my own general contracting business a little bit down the road, because I realized that if people like me, homeowners or other investors, were having so much trouble finding reliable contractors, that there was probably a place in the market for somebody who was going to be fair and honest and provide a good service in the construction space. But yeah, on that first deal, I did most of the work myself.
That's amazing. And at the time, you're still working as a cop, and also you doing fixing your first rental properties or your duplex as well. Mm-hmm. And any recommendation of for our listeners who are listening right now, you know, how do you juggling between, you know, like a full-time jobs and also, you know, like doing your rentals on the side and fixing it by yourself? You know, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. So for a while there, it was pretty tough. I would say from 2015 to 2020 or 2016 to 2021, I probably averaged 80, 90 hours a week, and that's not healthy or sustainable. So I don't necessarily recommend that, but I felt the motivation that I wanted to become financially free. I didn't plan on leaving my job in the beginning, but I wanted to have the option to leave my career. And so I was willing to do whatever it took, you know, and that meant, you know, ultimately starting a couple businesses, making a lot of income on the side doing that. All of my income from my career and my businesses, and, you know, as I started building cash flow, all of that went back into buying more real estate. And, you know, I was implementing the BRRRR strategy. So for me, I was buying properties at a discount that needed work, the stuff that a lot of people wouldn't buy, doing heavy, heavy renovations on most of these. And then a year later, typically I would refinance them, pull all of my equity and all of my cash out of the deal. And then that allowed me to scale quickly, you know? So, but yeah, for the listener, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. It's not for everybody. It was a very tough few years. But, you know, in the end, it did pay off.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you implemented the BRRRR strategy. Thank you for elaborating that. And you just went through that. And that means that you have to find these really deep, deep discount deals or heavy value add deals in order for it to work, right? How do you find these deals? And can you give a definition of what does it mean by heavy value add?
Yeah. So I call heavy value add the things that most people aren't willing to do. So that means structural issues, foundations. Most of my properties I completely rewired, completely replumbed, replaced most of the roofs. So, I mean, on a lot of these deals, I did everything from the foundation up, sometimes was replaced. There was some deals where literally the outside four walls of the building were the only things that stayed intact. Everything else was replaced. All the windows, all the plumbing, all the drywall, all the, you know, mechanicals, HVAC, everything. So most investors are not willing to do that. I would say 95% of investors are not willing to do that. And that allows opportunity if you are willing to do that. And you don't have to do all of it to that level. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to do some of those things, you know, whether it's mechanicals or foundation repairs or structural repairs, that allows you to have a little bit of a niche that allows you to get deals other people can't get. Mm-hmm. Now, today, that's more difficult because there's less inventory out there. But over the last 9 years or so, there was definitely a space in the market for those really heavy value add type of deals.
Got it. And also you mentioned that your first contractor, it was a bad contractor that stole like $3,500 from you. And, you know, like, is there any recommendation or advice or checklist when someone's looking for a contractor now? Or what are some of the things that they should be looking for?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to look for. But I would say if you are, let's say, trying to GC your own project, and you're just looking for subcontractors to come help you, you want to have referrals, if at all possible, from other investors that you trust. If you find somebody who's done really good work for another investor for many years, more than likely they're going to be a good, reliable option for you as well. Now, in this particular case, it was actually a referral from a friend of mine. The problem was this guy, during the process of finishing my friend's project and starting on mine, got back on drugs, which then, you know, caused him to go off on the wrong path. So even though I had tried to do some of those things we learn about, getting recommendation, I had called other people that this guy had worked for, gotten good recommendations from them. But I just unfortunately was in that time frame where he relapsed, got back on drugs. And unfortunately, you know, that obviously caused him to do a lot of bad things. And so I say that there's things you can do, whether it's finding companies that have good reputations, good websites, they have reviews, getting referrals, I think is the best. But I think one of the most important things that I don't hear people talk about is you want to align your expectations with the right type of contractor. And what I mean by that is, you know, now that I'm in the business, obviously I've seen both sides of this, that my company, for example, does kind of mid to high level renovations, right? We do a lot of retail stuff. And so we have investors call us all the time. And here in Cincinnati, they want like maybe a $500 or $7,500 turnover, which is a very low end turnover on like a one bedroom apartment. Well, we're not the right company for that because I can't do it that cheap. I can't even do it that cheap at my cost because our level of finish in our product is a higher level of product that they want and they're willing to pay for. So I use that example because I think oftentimes what happens in real estate is investors, they find the wrong person to match their project. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say you just need a handyman. You just want to touch up some paint. Hiring a big construction company is not a good option for that because you're going to pay way more, even if they're willing to do it. So I think, you know, half the battle is just finding the right match for your type of project.
Got it. And then, you know, can we walk through a little bit of your journey, like you started with your duplex and what happened after that? So you scale up pretty quickly and I know so you jump into multifamily as well. Can you walk us through?
Yeah. So, you know, for those first few years, like 2017, 18, 19, I was just slowly chugging along. I'd buy a couple properties a year, you know, mostly duplexes. I bought a couple six units in there, bought a couple more duplexes. And I think at some point I was maybe around like 20 something units, maybe 24 units or something like that. And at this point I had done everything myself. It was all my own capital. Again, I had been doing the BRRRR model. So I was renovating these, refinancing them, getting my capital out. And at some point I realized that all of this stuff is great, but if I really want to scale up and I do want to be completely financially free where I can leave my job when I want, I needed to do bigger deals, or if not bigger deals, I needed to do more volume. So that was the first time this was about 2020, I had started looking at partnering with people. So I had a friend of mine who had reached out several times about partnering on a deal. You know, he basically wanted to put the capital up. I do all of the operations like I had been doing on my other deals. And so with that first partnership, we bought an eight unit and the same thing, heavy value add. This one was actually one of the biggest renovations I've ever done. And so that was an eight unit, like I said. As the years went on, I still continued buying properties myself. Again, you know, eight unit, 10 unit, six unit, whatever, four units, just basically any deal I could find, it was a good deal. And then in 2022, I bought my first 28 unit, which was like a larger, you know, mid-sized multifamily. And that had been a space I was trying to break into, but I finally found a deal here in Cincinnati. It's right next to our University of Cincinnati. So we're basically converting that to like, you know, typical residential property to student housing, which has a lot higher margins. So we were able to get almost double the rent on the student housing market. And that also, again, another BRRRR type of deal. We're doing heavy renovations on the units as well. And then most recently, a few months ago, I bought a 40 unit with a different partner. And so those are like kind of my bigger properties. But, you know, again, throughout the years, I've also continued adding small and a few single families, a few small multifamilies. Like I said, right now we have 125 doors total.
That is amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing that. And like you mentioned about you partnering with other people, right, and taking down the 22 units for the first time in 2022. I want to get into that. But before then, you know, like you already got your financially free in 2021. Mm-hmm. You know, like, are you still in your job or you already left as a cop?
Yeah. So I left police work in 2021. Mm-hmm. I had finally reached a point where my cash flow from my existing portfolio mm-hmm. paid all of my bills. And, you know, and at that point, it wasn't really providing like some sort of luxury lifestyle or anything like that. But I knew that at the end of the day, with my real estate business mm-hmm. and my construction business, even if we hit a really tough economy, even if I couldn't make any money, I knew mm-hmm. I had at least enough passive income or semi-passive income to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. And so that allowed me to leave my W-2 job, that allowed me to get out of the law enforcement career, and it allowed me to now focus on building my businesses, which was kind of my passion, and obviously, you know, paid a lot better too. There was a couple years there where my job was my least paying job, and it just really mathematically didn't make sense to stay anymore.
Got it. And then let's come back to your 22 units when you're partnering with another partner to take it down. You know, like it's a typical larger property compared to what you used to do, right? And how do you know? You said that there's a lot of people reaching out and they wanted to partner with you. How do you know you're selecting the right partner to work with you, you know, like on a specific deals and making sure that you don't get a headache as well?
Yeah. So, you know, all of my partnerships have been joint ventures. So I haven't syndicated mm-hmm. anything at all, you know, to this point. The reason why I like the joint venture model, especially on these like mid-sized deals, is because usually you can have one or two, you know, semi-passive partners and then mm-hmm. one typically like more active partner, like, you know, for me, as an example, the one doing most of the operations. And the reason why I like that is because I already had a model that had been working really well. And so the people who were reaching out to me were the people that had seen the things I had done. They'd seen mm-hmm. my track record, and that that motivated them to reach out to me and want to partner with me. So I mm-hmm. wasn't going out soliciting people for money. I never asked people to partner with me. Every partner I had is somebody who approached me. And it was just a good relationship where, mm-hmm. you know, I was finding the types of deals they wanted to invest in, but they didn't have the skill set or the time to actively do those type of deals. Mm-hmm. And for me to get into the larger deals, I had to bring in outside capital other than my own. So it was just a good relationship. But for me, the way I operate, my perfect partner is somebody who doesn't want to be involved in the day-to-day decision-making mm-hmm. because I am basically taking my blueprint and I'm putting it on different properties. And we are doing, you know, we do almost the same renovation, almost the same everything. You know, so you can look at my properties 7-8 years ago when I first started, and they look almost identical to the ones we're doing today. We do the same material, same colors. Obviously we tweak it a little bit, you know, some of our stuff's like B class, some of mm-hmm. our stuff's like C minus. So we tweak it a little bit, you know, sometimes we tile our showers. Sometimes we do like a vinyl, but you know, for the most part, 90% of it is going to be the same. And for me, the right partner is somebody who's going to trust me to do my thing, mm-hmm. implement my strategy, you know, execute our business plan and be mostly, you know, passive.
Got it. And also congratulations on getting another unit, 40 units a few months ago. And, you know, like from your experience, is there any difference between coming from, you know, like a 6 units, 8 units to 22 units or 40 units? Any differences there?
I mean, it's just a scale, you know,
just
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, systematically, like mm-hmm. not really. I mean, you know, it's just bigger, right? Mm-hmm. The challenge, I think, comes from, and this doesn't necessarily mean bigger properties, but like, let's just say you bought all single families, right? If you go from one single family to 50, that's just going to be a different type of management. You have to have infrastructure. You have to have employees. I don't know anyone who's doing that successfully on their own because it's just, you know, and I don't do any third-party management. Everything is in-house. I have my own team. I have my own assistant. I have my own employees. So we do all of our renovations. We do all of our own maintenance. We do all of our own leasing, everything. So for me, that's what changed with the scale. So like mm-hmm. the type of deal and the strategy on the deal is not so much, but it's just managing the workload that comes with scaling up has been the biggest change.
Got it. And to manage the workloads, and you have to hire people to help you, right? Like you're talking about the general contractors earlier. So what, any recommendations for our listener who wanted to scale their business and start hiring people? How do you hire the right people to work for you? I know it's possibly like there's different roles and responsibility, but any tips or tricks in making sure that they hire the right people?
I wish I had the secret, you know. What I've learned, and I heard somebody else recently say this, and I don't remember who, but honestly, I think it's going with your gut and just be willing to move on from people quickly if you need to. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any, you know, secret tips to give. For me, I try to cast a wide net. I try to find as many people as I can. And for most of my roles, I'm hiring mm-hmm. construction workers, right? So it's mm-hmm. typically a pretty, you know, kind of niche group of people that are interested in working construction. They're either experienced people or they're brand new or whatever. But a lot of construction workers are pretty similar personalities in that business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, I'm unless you are like obviously giving me red flags and I know before I even hire you, you're going to be a problem. I'm very apt to try people out. And I tell them, I'm very honest with them. I'm like, look, everybody we bring in is going to get like a 30, 60, 90 day trial. You know, we're going to mm-hmm. have expectations for the 30, 60, 90 days. If you don't make them, you're not going to stay here permanently. You know, and that's just, mm-hmm. and I'm very transparent with my employees about that. And for the most part, they work out. We're clear on our expectations and, you know, they either rise to meet them or not. But honestly, what I've learned, and I've had employees who didn't work out, it's just a matter of hire quickly and fire quickly is kind of my model. So
that makes sense. That makes sense. And, you know, and Joseph, your company is also selling investment property. Can you tell us a little bit about that size of business and what you guys do on that end?
Yeah. Yeah. So just like my other business, I mean, none of this was intentional. You know, I didn't like set out to build a real estate sales business. I didn't set out to build a general construction company. All of this just kind of happened organically. And just like I saw the need in the market with the construction business, the same thing happened. When I was trying to buy my first investment properties, 2015, 2016, mm-hmm. I was working with other real estate agents. And I quickly realized that at least here in my market in Cincinnati, 99% of the agents in my market don't know anything about investment property. I mean, nothing, especially back then. You know, I think now people have started to learn more and open up to it. But I worked with a few agents and they, and as little as I knew about real estate at the time, they knew even less. So I was constantly trying to educate them on like the types of properties I was looking for, the types of deals, the type of, you know, types of houses or duplexes, whatever. And it was like pulling teeth to get an agent that was actually beneficial for me. And so honestly, I just looked at it and said, you know, if this is the bar, I think I can do it. And I went and got my license and then I started representing myself. And what happened as I started buying a few deals and becoming more successful as an investor, again, people saw it. I was putting it on social media. Mm-hmm. And then I started having people in my network and people on Facebook and things like that reach out and say, hey, I see you're buying and selling these duplexes, whatever. Could you help me do that? And that's literally, you know, how it was just an organic thing. And I even when I got my license, I never thought I would have a real estate sales business. But, you know, I ended up being pretty good at it. You know, people reached out. And again, all of it was organic. I don't do any marketing at all. I mean, I guess you could call, you know, podcasts and things like this marketing, but it's like, you know, I go on, I do things like this because I enjoy it, not mm-hmm. to sell anything. And again, people just, you know, see what I'm doing and they want to be a part of it.
That's awesome. Congratulations to you on all your success, all your successes. And so Joseph, what is next for you and your company?
Yeah. I mean, we want to keep scaling. Buy and hold is still my main focus on the investment side. I want to continue buying. I want to get into larger deals. You know, I'd love to get into some 100, 200 unit type properties. I plan on staying in Southwest Ohio because that's where I have, you know, my skill set, my experience, and I can have the most control over the types of deals I do. But it's on the business side, you know, again, scaling as well. Obviously, the real estate sales business was a lot slower last year because mm-hmm. of the way rates are and the way the market's been. So, you know, I think 2024 is still going to be relatively slow on the real estate, you know, transactional side. But the construction business has been growing like crazy. So on that side, I'd love to get into doing some new development. So whether that's new construction homes or even potentially multifamily development. So that's kind of what I'm working on the construction business. And yeah, plans just to keep growing and see where this year takes us.
That's awesome. And Joseph, my last question for you is, you know, if you know what you know now about real estate, you know, like, is there anything else that you would have done differently when you started your real estate journey?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's many things I would do differently in hindsight. I mean, my biggest mistake early on, as I already mentioned, was hiring the wrong contractor, you know, and I think that that's something that new investors deal with often. Mm-hmm. I guess the one thing I'll say about any mistake is that if you're in real estate long enough, you're going to make plenty of mistakes. And the key is making sure you learn a lesson. Sometimes they're painful lessons. Make sure you learn from them and don't do them repeatedly, because the people that make the same mistakes over and over or continuously make mistakes are the ones that often, you know, get out of the business, or they realize it's just too difficult or not for them. And I don't think that that's necessarily the truth. I think that if you stay persistent and consistent and you do learn lessons from your mistakes, you'll have success in real estate if you stick to it.
That's awesome. Joseph, thank you so much for spending time with me today and to talk to me about your real estate journeys and to talk to me about your construction business and also the sell business as well. So if our listener wanted to find out more about you, your company, or work with you or be friend with you, where can they go?
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook at Joe Cornwell, and my company is Realty One Stop. You can follow us on there as well. On Instagram, I am Joe Cornwell RE. Yeah, those are the two best ways to reach out to me. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you.
That's awesome. Joseph, thank you again for your time. We appreciate you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.